Good evening.
Good evening.
How may I help?
We were wondering if you would begin by speaking to us about the sleep state.
Is this a question that has meaning to most of you? Yes.
Yeah. What do we do? Is that what it means? Where are we in our sleep?
What is it that you do, and what could you do, and what perhaps might you do to change things? All right. First of all, I cannot answer in general, because if I were speaking on a one-to-one basis, I could say, you have this condition, you have that, and you are there. You understand? It's a matter of where are you in your own understanding of consciousness and where it takes you. Good evening. But I will give some general guidelines, and I would ask that you remember that you must place yourself with as much honesty as you can into the various areas that I will describe. First and foremost, you will have without doubt entered all of the states that I will speak about. Whether you retain memory of them or not is at this moment not terribly important. The fact is that no one in this room who cares to come and hear a spook speaking will not have at least entered for some period of time all of the states that we will be dealing with. The first is the one that you are perhaps most familiar with because it carries the greatest trauma to you, which is the astral. As soon as you go into a sleep state, you will find that there is an area where things become very real, things become very frightening. It is the area where all of the thought forms that you have been putting around you all day, and indeed perhaps even all of your lifetime, take some form and present themselves to you in a symbolic form. It is also the place where if you have had lobster for dinner, you're very likely to run into various difficulties. It is also, if you read a very terrifying book before you go to bed, television impressions, whatever. That's that first layer that you will meet. It is also the level of the nightmare state. It is also a level that you can get through without much trouble, as long as you know that you can. Now, the second level is where you spend most of your time, as far as you're being conscious of what you are doing. And the second level is where you have your own personality, your own difficulties, your own life drama will appear to you in symbolic form to be dealt with in various ways. I will not be able to say to you that everything you see in a dream state is you. I know that there's a whole school of thought on the earth plane that everything you see in a dream state must symbolize some part of your personality. That is not always the case, but I will tell you this. It is very rare for you to have a dream about someone else that doesn't in some way have tremendous meaning in your life. So please, your first question should be, what does it have to do with me? Please don't place it immediately on other, you see. It is your responsibility, it is your dream, it is your need that has brought this into awareness, and therefore something is there for you. Now, sometimes on this level, what you find, believe me, sometime on this level you will find the need to be told something that you refuse to hear in your waking state. This is where we can get you pretty dynamically. And that is simply that if we are trying, we being anything benevolent, who is trying to reach your awareness, if we cannot get you any other way, we will do our best in this state. Because it is when you are most likely to remember. The third state is the state that you are least likely to remember, but it is the one that will affect you the deepest. You will perhaps understand me when I would tell you that it is the realm of the bright colors. It is the realm of the vast blue sky. It is the realm of the white pillars and the fires burning in temple doors. It is the realm of the bearded ones and the women with the flowing gowns. Do you understand me? It is the realm that only comes in the highest part of your awareness, and it comes to give you something. Now, most of the things that you find in the third realm, you will not remember unless you are beginning to teach yourself to remember. This is not difficult, and I will, please remind me if I fail to do so. I'd like to make sure I give some pointers along that line. Understand this, my friend. You are so convinced that this is the only world, and I will tell you that this is not so. This is not where all of your teachers are. This is not where your best lessons are learned. So much of what you learn has nothing to do with what you perceive on this earth. Those of you who have given the call that says, I want to know so I might serve, not I want to know with that arrogance that, you understand, not that, but I want to know so I might serve, we take you up on that. And how can we teach you? You see, you are so convinced. For example, if you were really aware that it was possible, you could all sit in your quietude in your own living room and say, please, I need to know the answer. The answer would be given. You would get up and you would go about your business, and it would be that simple. But you are convinced that you have to be a magician. And on top of that, an entirely pure magician in order to do this. You see the limits that you have placed there. So how do we reach you past all of this nonsense that you have made so important? If you're not absolutely pure, you cannot go to the higher regions. What nonsense this is. What utter nonsense. How do you think you will ever get pure if you don't go to the higher regions? Do you see? You've got it backwards. It is the very fact that you say, I need to understand that I need to become cleansed, not in some holy physical sense. What does cleansing mean? Cleansing means taking it and wiping out those beliefs that have held you prisoner. That's what freedom means. That's what purity means. I am not concerned with the mundane purity that you were so addicted to on this earth plane. I'm speaking of true purity, which is that purity that knows of the changing scene, that all comes and goes, and everything is flux, and that your only job is to stand and reflect the pure egoless state so others may observe that. All right. If you believe for 1 minute that the other side, if you wish to call it that, the higher power, the higher self, name it what you will, wishes to in some way instruct you, then you, if you would care to hear it, should go about setting up your life so that we can best instruct you. And it's very simple. First of all, of course, you know my meditation. I go over and again, please, 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 all right. If you do not choose to do that, or even if you do, then let us not lose that long expanse of night. What happens is very simple. As you leave what you call the normal state of awareness, and your consciousness moves through what is called the astral. Now, the astral has two parts to it, if you wish to split all these things up, the lower and the higher. When you move through the lower, you can condition yourself so it is a movement this fast. You don't have to worry about it as long as you are aware that it is a clear passage, if you choose it to be. When you reach the realm of the higher astral, when you're in that area where your lessons are best learned as far as your personality development goes, it is also the realm where you can meet old friends. It is also the realm where you will be told about your own death, the death of others. All of these things are told in that time. Many of the things that you are told will be symbolic, and you will say, I'm going to die, and it isn't true at all. Of course, it ultimately so, but not in the immediacy of the moment. But it will come in a state. So, of course, your responsibility is to somehow connect up with your own inner symbology so that you can use that information. And please, my friends, I will say this, and you probably won't believe me. You are the very best interpreter of your dreams. You. Please understand this. This is another piece of your own responsibility. Your vast self has created this dream to teach you, not to teach your neighbor. It's yours. It is yours. And who knows better? Just as I say, who has a better right to experience your vast self than you? Who has a better right to understand your own dreams than you? Other people can only give you their information. And believe me, my friend, it will come with a great deal of cloudiness. Please, do not be deceived in this. You have your own symbology, and it is your responsibility. All right. Now, when you move onward past that space and become extremely quiet, then you move into what I call the realm of the clear light. It is in that realm that you have expanded your awareness to such an extent that to simply pose a question will receive the answer. It isn't a matter of, oh, I have posed a question, now I must go and get the answer. You see, when you are in expansion, there's nowhere to go. You are expanded. Do you follow me? It isn't as if, please, what I want to stop is this terrifying idea that somehow something in here has to go up this body and go out of this head and then fly out through all of this business and then keep going farther and farther and struggling and struggling. This is what you seem to reflect to me when I think of your ideas of how to achieve these higher states of dream understanding. You see, you were saying in your minds to me that you have to go somewhere. How are you going to do that? You don't have to go anywhere. You do not have to go anywhere for anything. It is absolutely all here. It can be nowhere else. It is here. If the vast self is here, which I tell you that it is, then you need go nowhere for anything. It is here. All right. Now, when the question is a soul question, which I mean, you know, people say, well, I have this problem and I want the answer and it doesn't come and I ask to have my dreams clarified and so on, and it doesn't come. And most of the time, my friends, I will tell you, it is because you don't really have that intensity that will bring the answer. My friends, I'm afraid the rules are the same on the dream cycle as they are on the world cycle. What you really want is what you are going to get. If you like fantasy, if you like dancing girls, if you like handsome men, if you like love affairs, if you like wonderful vast tables filled with food, if you want fantasies of politics and so on, you will have them. That is what you will have. When you start detaching yourself from your dreams, you were saying that another power so overwhelming has moved into your life and is disturbing your sleep. And I say, don't make that mistake, my friend. Do not take away your own responsibility because it is yours. If you are having dreams that are disturbing to you, find out why. It is very simple. If you have dreams of a great deal of violence, does this mean you're a violent person? Perhaps not. But there's a great possibility it means that you have unreconciled violent feelings that you have not allowed yourself to surface with and deal with directly. And I say, get about your business. There's nothing in your dream state that can hurt you. It is all your own creation. What then is there to fear? You have created it. It is your responsibility to dissolve it. And you dissolve it the same way you do thought forms. You simply make the adjustments in your life and things begin to change. Do you understand? It all means being responsible. These are your creations. I don't mean that you need to be worried, anxious, terrified about the terrifying dreams. They aren't difficult to understand, you know. When they appear, you simply take them in, you understand them, and you say, all right, I face that part of myself. One of the things that dreams are very best at is bringing absolutely straight to you your fears. If you want to know your areas of fears, my friends, look at your dreams, because they will come. They will come. They're not prophetic. You know, someone told the woman once that they were having dream after dream after dream of the same thing. It was a situation of a man, and he had a dream over and over that his wife was leaving him, and so on and so on. And he was terrified because he was afraid that this constancy of the dream meant that this was going to happen. All it was saying is, you will never become free until you are able to take this into your awareness and deal with it. It is your fear. You are creating these dreams. It is so simple, my friends. It isn't difficult at all to understand. But when you keep saying, oh, they're prophetic, which is a great mistake, then you become afraid. And if you are afraid of your dreams, then you have fallen into a very difficult pattern. There's nothing fearful in your dreams. Nothing. Nothing that you need to be afraid of. All right. When you finally are opened up to that open awareness state, you will have various things happen depending on who you are. Some of you will come back with a recognition of having sat on a beautiful bench surrounded by beauty, and someone is sitting there speaking to you, and you will remember. Others of you will see yourself in a vast field of unending flowers, and somehow nothing is said, but everything is felt, and you feel uplifted, and all is changed for you. Some of you will see yourselves lifted on the wings of birds and flown, and then oblivion you can't remember. Others of you will find yourself on beautiful islands surrounded by vast seas, and somehow all is right. All of these things are deeply symbolic of how they try to reach to you and say, remember. It is not important that you remember those dreams. Please do not apply the same anxiety to your dream life that you apply to your everyday life. Otherwise, you will never get any rest. It is simply a matter of learning that if you wish to know something, you have an access to it and you can use it. If you do not wish to, it doesn't matter. I am not here to say that I want all of you to rush home and open up dream workbooks and begin to furiously do this and that. Now, for some of you, that is precisely what you should do, and you know who you are, and it doesn't matter. But most of you are not inclined that way, and that isn't what it's all about. But there is one thing that you can all do, and this I do recommend. If you wish to be instructed in your sleep, then I would ask you, before you go to sleep, pay attention to what you're thinking about. Because if you program yourself with television, rambunctious books, a lot of liquor, a lot of dope, a lot of whatever, and then fall into the deep sleep, that is precisely where you're going to stay. You're going to stay right on that level. You will never get off the ground. This is one reason that alcoholics have such terrifying lives. Because they never get off. They go to sleep in that state, and it keeps them there. The one place where they could break loose and move into vast dimensions of understanding is not open, because they have loaded, do you understand? They have loaded not their body, but their consciousness. Understand that what you take in to this physical vehicle is all part of the whole. And when you stupor your mind before you go to sleep, that's precisely what you're going to have, is a night of oblivion. And then all the demons. And then all the darkness. And then all the difficulty. And then the depression when you arise. All of these things. And it's simply saying, please, pay attention to what you do before you go to sleep, because you spend a lot of time asleep. A lot of time. You wouldn't dream of drinking a quart, well, I don't think anyone in here would, a quart of whiskey before beginning your day. That would put you in a state of stupor. But many people do some very weird things before going to bed and don't realize it has the same effect. It stupefies you, literally. Now, television also can do this if it's a particular kind of thing. Just be careful. Understand there's no separation between you as you're going to sleep and you when you've gone to sleep. You know, it's not something other. Your daily life affects very much what happens, and vice versa. There's a reciprocal move. The only thing I would like to say is before you go to sleep, if you can find the time, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, not very long. If you're not a meditator, I would suggest to you that you spend 5 minutes a night not laying down, because you know what happens, but sitting up. And attuning yourself and aligning yourself and opening up yourself, getting yourself ready for a lot of hours. A lot of hours are spent that way, my friend. How well are you preparing yourself? How well? Be aware of this, please. And if you go to sleep with the deep intent in your being that you want your expansion and your understanding to continue in the sleep state, then turn it over. Turn it over. There's no ritual. There's no chant that you have to do. There's no mumbo jumbo. You simply have the intent within your being, please continue my learning while I sleep. And then fall asleep. And when you arise, you will find, if you really have the intent of being, you will find that you will be awakened at night often with a dream of importance. And then you can do with it as you will. Write it down if you're inclined. Sit up at once. Wake up your mate. Start talking about it. Whatever. Whatever you can get away with. Mostly. But by and large, it is a one-to-one relationship between you and the symbols in your dream. But somehow you must get them down. If they're dynamic, if they move you, if you are awakened, this means there is something for you. Please pay attention. Do you see? It's the same as during your day. Certain thoughts move you so strongly that you say, I will listen. And such is it in the dream state. We have to use whatever we can. And this is one of our greatest tools. But again, I say, please do not become devoted to the proposition of understanding your dreams with this very tedious, boring, heavy, laborious, do you understand, this kind of attitude, because then your dreams become an added problem. And truly spoken, they do become an added problem. And unless you really enjoy that, then I would suggest to you that you have the same joyful, lighthearted knowing that as your day brings you that which you need, and hopefully you're awake during your day, then such is the hope that during the night state, you will also be in a state of awakenedness. Now, a question that always arises, what of the enlightened ones do they dream? And curiously, they do, but in a totally different way. Many of you dream differently each from the other. Some of you go to sleep, and you sleep all night, and you awaken, and you remember nothing. That can arise from one of two sources. You can pick whichever one you want. One will make your ego feel very good. The other will make your ego feel very bad. It is your choice. There is no doubt that many of you in this room are what they call the servants. That simply means that your consciousness moves and blends with other people's consciousness in the dream state when they are in need. And you give what you have to give, and they receive what they are capable of receiving. There are infinite variety of this. The woman herself had a series of dreams of seeing people having heart attacks, and she was there holding them, and they would die. And she was very perplexed because she thought that someone dear to her was going to die, although there was no face on any of these figures. It's simply a matter of, it was her turn to do her time, which means to go in her consciousness. I'm not speaking of astral projection, my friend. I am not speaking of astral projection. I'm speaking of a release of the vast awareness within your being that moves intuitively to serve, sees a need, and takes care of it. And all that happened was the consciousness moved to an area where a death was taking place. Symbolically to her, she nurtured the dying, and then it was finished. Do you see what I'm saying? Many of your dreams are like this, and if they startle you, and they seem so real, and you become afraid, and you do not trust, then you are going to begin to think that all of these terrifying things are yours, coming into your life, or to your neighbors. Many of you who dream of children dying, and you're being in their help, it isn't that children are dying in your life, but in your awareness, a child has called, and your heart goes, and you serve, and you return, and you've done what you could. No one dies alone, my friend. No one. No one dies alone. And certain of you are called to certain lines, and others of you to others. This gentleman deals very much with penitentiary people in the dream state. Various of you are very close to the children. Some of you deal only with the elderly. Depending. Do you see what I'm saying? When you see yourselves as limited beings, then you serve limitedly and you have limited awareness of all things. I do not want you to become too preoccupied with your job on the other side, because then it will just be another difficulty for you. I simply want to make clear that these things happen, that you are not simply somewhere inert when you have fallen into sleep. If you wish to serve, then please live your life during the day so that you will be most efficacious in your sleep. Do you see what I'm saying? If you live your life during the day with a heart that wishes to serve, no matter how limited you are able to do that, the heart cries and the need is met, and when the people need it, it is there for them. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to do anything. You simply have to say, please, use me, please. There is no one on this planet who gives a sincere call to serve that is not able to serve. And if your life doesn't appear that way, but your heart is filled with the desire, but there are circumstances surrounding you that limit your abilities because you have to do work in stores and so on, or too many, you know, children obligations, family, so on. That is not the issue. If your heart wants to serve, believe me, it will find a way. And I don't mean during your waking hours. Please, you have limited everything about you because you believe that this is thou. Thou art this, and that is all. And that is a lie. That is the lie that traps you. That is the lie that does not allow you to know what you really do, where you really move, where you really serve. Because most of your deepest service does not take place here. Because you see, it cannot. Because you will not let each other help each other. Are you aware of that? Someone longs to help, but they are afraid. Because what if they give and you say no? Or what if they give and it turns out bad? Then they feel the guilt. This is why I say, to be a real server, you have to have courage. You have to have the courage to go within and make the best assessment of what needs to be and do it. And do it with all of the gusto that you've got. Half-done work, my friends, measures out with half-done results. And it doesn't need to be that way. But you are afraid. You are afraid. And I understand that. And I yearn to have you understand that it doesn't matter if the other person says no. Just you. In whatever way that is meaningful to you, just give. Please, just give. And if you live your life that way during the day, believe me, the work that you do on behalf of things that you have no idea of greatly blesses your life. But you have this idea, since you are the body, you go into a dark room, you lay down, hours go by, and you're just laying there. It's interesting that the human does not think more carefully. That is a very illogical thing, is it not? Because if you really are there, then why don't you remember being there? If you really are there, my friends, why do you not remember that? It's because you're not there. There is no need for you to be there. Now, to allay some fears that I see flashing through some of your minds, I will tell you this. The instant that it is necessary for a return, the consciousness contracts in your back. The instant. Because you've never gone anywhere. One of the difficulties about all this occult business, of course, I don't know what to speak badly about the occult, I realize that, but one of the real difficulties of the occult lies here. You have an idea in your mind that you have to leave the body and traverse vast distances of demons, demagogues, and so on in order to reach the vault of heaven and the bosom of the Lord. My friend, the bosom of the Lord is within your own bosom. Any hells that you traverse are in your own mind only, nowhere else. I will admit that you have done a very good job of creating a very strong force field that makes it very believable. And all of your literature and many of your psychics feed into this, that you have to leave the body and traverse and so on. I do not recommend that you try astral projection unless you really enjoy it. It is not necessary, my friends. It is not necessary. And as far as danger goes, this is another fear. Well, what if I meet all these awful things? All right? So what do you meet? You meet everything that you have created. I say to you once again, my friend, you are responsible for your own creations. And you have created them, and you must face them. If you have the power to create them, then are we going to say you do not have the power to dissolve them? Are you going to accept that powerless role? Please don't. Please don't accept that powerless role. You have a lot more going for you than that. But take them with light but serious intent. Do you understand that statement? A light but serious intent. Morbidity has no place in spiritual awareness. It only means that you have believed your limitations and are being bound by them all of the time, and they pull you down into despondency, and that is where you are no good to anybody, including yourself. So, when you finally understand that you have created your own limitations and you are ready to face them, believe me, my friends, you don't have to do anything. Once again, we're back to where we began, my friend, a long time ago. You don't have to do anything. You just have to be willing to do it. And the process is then begun. The process lies within you, and yet is not in control. You are not in control of that process. So please don't try to find the switches that turn it on. Please. Just be willing to make the changes, and you'll see what happens to you. Are there questions? I think there are. Yes.
My question, Bartholomew, deals with music. Lately I have sort of, I guess you could say I have a feeling that what we experience is simply music. It's what we experience maybe in our media, and we may supply the notes once in a while. And in other words, if we may write the music any way we want, at any time we want, on the basis of how we perceive what we experience. In other words, we may write a symphony, or we may write a cacophony. Almost the same experience, but it just simply is on how we perceive and how we choose to perceive any situation or any reality. I think that's the word I really like. Reality is that the reality is somewhere related to that music, and that maybe that it might be all music.
Yes.
Question.
The doctor wants me to restate your question. I will do my best. Please correct me if I'm in error. I sense that what he is asking is his perception of how he views reality somehow connected with how he hears and perceives music. and how he may even write. How would you say?
I'd say that it's entirely, I would say that it would have nothing to do with how, what I think of music at all.
No, perceived.
Perceived, because it seems that it has occurred to me that music is something that is really not definable at all. And in terms of vibration, because it seems that perhaps a melody or a music or even a vibration, a sound, a hum, seems to be pleasing for some reason or the other. And that we may not exactly know why. And that there may be a harmony that exists, a vibration. And I guess the way I relate this to is perhaps to the vibration of an atom. It has a vibration, it has a frequency.
Are you asking, is there a harmony throughout the universe that you touch upon that is translated by some into musical note?
Know that there may be a universal harmony,
yes,
that we may observe. Particular, for instance, on this level, this waking level that we exist on, can we see music as one thing? I'm only asking, I don't know, but suppose on, is there a music that perhaps perpetrates all that requires simply observation?
All right. I will answer what I think to be the thrust of what you're saying. It must be obvious to all of you that if there is motion, then there must be sound of some kind, movement has sound of some kind to it. When you yourself are the instrument of hearing the music, then you act as the instrument either harmoniously tuned or disharmoniously tuned to what is moving through you. All right? The most beautiful music in the world through a despondent mind is not going to sound beautiful to that instrument. But it is also true that at every moment there is available the divine harmony of awareness of sound. And there's no use talking about it, my friend, because it is something one either experiences or one does not. Some people are very attuned to that, and that will be very meaningful. Many people will never, ever understand what it is you're reaching for. They're not attuned in that way. There is always harmony if you can lift yourself, your awareness, far enough and vast enough. No matter what you are looking at, there is harmony to be observed, always. To be observed in the physical sense of feeling the harmony of it, and if you were attuned to it, to feeling and hearing the vibrational frequencies of it, depending entirely on how your particular instrument is attuned, which is your body. But if the question is there always divine harmony in all things? The answer is, oh yes. Then why do you not observe it? Because the instrument is not tuned for harmony, it's tuned for disharmony. And it is so used to hearing disharmony that it is forgotten that there's another way to hear. Just as I keep saying to you, there is another way to see. There is another way to feel. There's another way to live. But you've forgotten. It's the same.
Bartholomew, going back to the dream situation, I sense that
I want you to speak louder, I'm sure.
Might be a question. Speaking of the nightmare state, how about small children who have nightmares?
There are no such thing as small children. There are vast souls encased in small bodies. Okay. Yes, I will grant you that. But there are no small children. And many children, many, many children, in their early months, have patterns within them being rejuvenated, revitalized, reawakened, if you will. And their destiny is their own. And they have to meet their own imagery. You don't get away from your imagery just by dying, my friends. It won't work. You're going to have to do something better than that. So just as it is that you die with what you are and you are born again with the need for reconciliation of your disharmonious creations, which is all it is. Understand this, it is only that is the disillusion of your own disharmonious creations. That's all you're here for. That is all you're here for. So the answer is simply, in some children they will come quickly. They will come in their early years because the need is so intense in them to get on with it. In others they will slumber for longer. It is almost unimportant, if I might say that. The only job that you have is to do what you can to please do not ever tell your children that their nightmares are not real.
This is the question that I was wondering about.
Please do not say that.
What to do to help you?
You don't really do anything except to bring out the strength by saying, if there is fear, let's talk about it. Get them to verbalize as much as they can. If they're too young to verbalize, you can't say anything anyway. Just be as positive, as loving. If you start telling these young children that their dreams are not real, you have given away one of their biggest power sources of their whole life. Mm-hmm. You have said, your nightlife is drivel. 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 Don't pay any attention to it. That isn't helpful. Because they cannot turn their nightlife off by saying it's drivel. But when you tell them that it means nothing, and yet their whole being is saying, it must mean something. This is very much what happens on the earth plane when you lie to each other. When you lie to one another on the earth plane and try to deceive, the greatest damage that you do is you confuse the other person. A person comes to you and they say, I sense with all my being that this is so about you in your relationship to me. And you, to cover your own life, not wanting difficulties, you lie. You say, no, it isn't so. All right. Now, do I feel that you should never tell lies just for some strange and unknown reason? The reason I don't like lying, and I do not like it, is because you are taking from that other person the validity of their own true perception. You are compounding their difficulties on the earth plane. You are now saying what you are perceiving is not true. And their whole being is saying, but it is true. What does this do to the person within? What does this do to children? Please do not lie. It is best to say nothing, especially to children. If you cannot bring yourself to think of a way in love and understanding to speak, then be silent, but do not lie. Because you are absolutely validating one of their deepest sources of power, one of their deepest ways of understanding the world and the night world that they have to inhabit until they understand it. Please. I am not, you know, this isn't a great moral, and it's not written on great tablets. It's plain fair. It's just playing fair. There is no one who would prefer to hear a lie. Believe that. And this story about, oh, well, I just didn't want to hurt them. I just felt I just, you know, they couldn't take it. How much more damage you are doing, how much more damage you do when you lie. Because Most human beings are not aware that they have a power within them to reconcile the duality in their life. And one of the most dynamic things they have is their own intuitive understanding. And if you lie, and if you live a lie with them any long periods of time, you are destroying a great sense of power, and they will no longer believe in it. All right, the normal thing is, in a child, they come to you, they say, thus and so has happened, they've heard about it, a great tragedy, and you say, no, it's not true. I have even observed parents, one parent denying that there has been any kind of difficulty between the husband and wife. Oh no, nothing's wrong. My dear friends, how unfair. Do you think your words are changing anything? All you have done is completely confuse, completely befuddle, and drive them away from their own sense of understanding. Now they really are going mad, are they not? Then what do they think of in themselves? What kind of a person am I that I conjure up these terrible ideas? It happens when husbands and wives are unfaithful and lie. You're destroying that which you think you are saving. Make no mistake. Close relationships always know what is happening. I've said to some of you before, the least useful media of communication is speech. The least useful and the least authentic. Please understand, you do not fool anybody, and nobody fools you. It is just, what do you choose to believe today? What do you choose to believe because it's comfortable, because it fits, because it doesn't call upon you for any resources of courage or confrontation or difficulty? And so you lie to yourself and allow others to lie to you. I repeat, one of the greatest disservices you do to each other is when you lie. Because nobody is really free.
But when you come back, you're reborn, do you bring back the knowledge that the higher knowledge that you have?
Very good question. The question is, when you take a new form, a new physical form, do you bring the higher knowledge that you have accumulated and expanded? The answer is absolutely. Absolutely. Nothing is ever lost. Once you have expanded, it's a funny thing. I get the vision of humans as thinking that conscious expansion is something like an accordion that goes in and out, and lots of air and wind and wheezing, and all of this is going thus like this. This is how I do perceive it, and this is not how it happens. If you can begin, this is an untruth that I'm about to speak, but I will use it as an analogy. If you could see it as a formation of beginning understanding in the form of a tennis ball, a tennis ball, and then as you expand, the ball itself expands, and around it, as a magnet, accumulates many, many experiences. And intermingling all of this with your earthly experiences is also this wonderful, soundless harmony of wisdom that you have brought into that. And as you take a new form, this is simply the pool out of which you surround yourself, that you call upon. And it is always, always open to vast expansion. Always. So whatever you have done, whatever you have learned, whatever you have gleaned and expanded into, is yours by right of conquest, if you wish to put it that way. You cannot take your consciousness and squish it down into something.
Do you have to re-experience
no.
it at all?
No. You will re-experience it. You don't have to. This is spontaneous happening. I must go back to this again and again and again. If I were to say to you, my dear, I want you to expand your consciousness for me right now. Your first question, I imagine, would be, well, how shall I do that? My answer will be, well, you cannot. And then you will say, well, why did you ask me? And I would say, because you can. And you'd say, you are speaking gibberish. You see. Because the thing is that there is no button for you to find and push that will do this for you. Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you try to do when you start on the spiritual path. You know what that is. You spend all of those years looking for the buttons, and you push this one and that one, and you are spending all of this time pushing buttons because you have an erroneous assumption, which is that something within your brain is going to stumble upon the truth, and then you will push the button and you will be free. The answer is not that easy. It is easier. The answer is, I say again, all you have to do is to want it. And you say, that's not true. I've wanted it all my life. I have a whole life of service and good works to prove to you that I want it, and I don't have it. And I say, let us spend 15 minutes together, and we will find out. What do you really want? Because my friends, believe this. What you really want, you will get. And so please do not cry to heaven and beat your breast and say, God, why hast thou forsaken me? The answer is quite simple. You just aren't interested. You have other fish to fry. So go about it. But do not be dualistic. Do not, on the one hand, go about getting what you want and then getting angry at God for not giving you something you didn't want in the first place. That is illogical. You say, I'm filled with illness. I don't want it. I say, oh, let us really be quiet and think about this. Oh, are you sure? Are you really sure that this illness is doing nothing for you at all? Nothing? Nothing? If it's doing nothing for you, you will not keep it. I promise you that.
Bartholomew, then you are talking on another level there too. You say when we want something, it is not that we are conscious of wanting this something. Is that correct? It's like you're saying that if that we have what we want.
Yes, and may I clarify that?
Please.
The way you can find out what you want, my dear friend, is to watch your mind and think what it thinks about all day. And if you can tell me that you have spent the majority of your day yearning or thinking about or dwelling upon awareness or immersed in awareness in whatever way is meaningful for you, and you still do not experience awareness, then we have something to discuss. And I would like to hear about it. Because most of the time, your mind is involved in other things. I tell you, the mind builds your world, remember? Your mind builds your world. As you think, so do you receive it. And if you are spending most of your day in deep awareness, not yearning, yearning is not necessary for some, in answer to your former. If it is meaningful to yearn, then yearn all of the time. If it is meaningful to poise yourself with deep awareness, then do it. But pay attention and do not say, I am not getting what I want, until you have gone through your day in your mind and watched. What are you thinking about? Where is your mind? Are you ill? All right. How much of your day are you thinking about your ill? How much of your day are you thinking, how am I going to get rid of this ill, and where does it hurt now, and what shall I do, and should I say this, or should I? What are you thinking about? If you say to me, I want a harmonious marriage, how much of your day are you thinking, oh, I wonder how I'm going to get a harmonious marriage, and you remember what he said or she said, and what am I, how am I going to do that? What are you doing with your mind? Are you building in your mind a harmonious marriage, or are you just going through the residue of a disharmonious relationship? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? When you think of your children, what are you thinking when you think of them? Do you see them strong, true, bold, courageous, or do you see them opposite? You build in your mind, and they receive it. And this is where you affect each other, and make no mistake about it. If you really want to help someone, then your first job is to remove instantly every negative thought about their condition and put in its place the most dynamic, uplifting, explosive creation that you can make in your mind and hold to it in spite of what you see and hear. Because it takes time to make those changes. What do you spend your day thinking about? You know, if you spend 10 minutes in the morning saying, God, I want you, and the rest of the day just mucking around. Be honest. Be fair. Please be fair. Yes.
I would have to classify myself in the category of not yearning 24 hours a day. But I do yearn some of each day, almost every day,
yes,
for awareness. Is it appropriate during that time that I'm yearning to ask in prayer for help in yearning 24 hours a day?
I would say absolutely one thing. I don't care what trick you have to play, do it. And if that works, then do it. I don't care, because I know so clearly that it is the accumulation that builds the power. All we are going for, my friends, is power. That's all. Power. I'm not speaking of evil power. I'm speaking of dynamic, God-imbued power that says, I am, and you're not going to get it by mucking around. It will not happen. I don't care what your own way is. Find it, get it by the teeth, and don't let it go, because that's the only kind of valor that wins, whatever it takes. And although you may not do it 24 hours a day, you must say, my friend, that you receive. I know it. And good for you. Yes.
Bartholomew, how can we help each other do that?
By the joy. By the refusing to see the ugliness that is perhaps very obvious. By refusing to allow the other person to hurt you. Do you know that if you could do just that one thing, to never allow a human being to hurt you, you will have done far more than all the do-gooders that I can imagine. Do you understand me when I say that? To not allow anyone to hurt you. I'm not saying put up a protective wall and not let anybody get you. I say not let anybody hurt you.
But how?
By believing, and this is the hardest thing of all, by knowing somehow that this moving between, this altercation, this attack, defense, dance that you are performing is simply that. Between two physical blobs of energy that are going to disintegrate, but that there is an undyingness present in that. And that if you keep in your own mind the remembrance of that as the reality, it will begin to immerse your mind, and you won't be able to see the other. I know it sounds drivel, but it works. It is a matter of beginning today, and each time, instead of dancing with the difficulties, saying somewhere dynamically in yourself, I will not hold that view of you. I won't. And there is a love power, believe me. Love is. It is. And when you say, I can't do it, because you cannot, you're angry, you're hurt. But there is power. And when you say, do it for me, I can only say, try it again, again, again. Fall down, pick up, go, go. It does happen. And then someday you'll say, oh my God, a whole day and nobody has hurt me. What a wonderful day it's been. And then you go through it and you say, move. You see, the therapists are very correct in one very dynamic statement. When you pretend something, you're not doing anything at all. But when you say, you feel it, you know it, the pain is upon you, and then you say, I know where this road leads, don't you? You all know where that road leads. Attack, defense, attack, defense. When you stand there within your being and say, no, but then the second thing is, what do I do? And the second thing is, I can't do it. And that is the truth. And then the third thing is, all right then. If it is really the divine will that harmony prevail, then let it prevail. And it doesn't. And you don't do it. But if you still harbor the belief that your mouth can say words that your ego has made that is going to change things, then you will continue to do the dance, however cleverly. But when you know that there is not in that dance the freedom you seek, then the power moves. And each time you do it, my dear friend, it gets stronger, closer to you, more available, more real. I know it's not real for most of you. That's why I come each month to say it is real. Move to it, get it, and use it. It is yours by divine right. So use it for the divine good. And it can be done. Until someday, the greatest things can happen before you, against you, and you will not respond. I'm not saying you're some automaton that moves and doesn't know, but your whole heart knows that there is a power that will take care of it. And it does. Those of you who don't believe, try it, try it, try it. And then, if you've done it a year and it hasn't worked, then come back and talk. Let's see.
At the beginning of this year, you said that it was a year of great power moving across the earth, and things could go one way or the other toward, quote, good or evil. And I wondered if you could give a progress report from the way you see it.
The question is, at the beginning of the year, I made the statement that power was moving across the face of the earth, and that how that power was used would determine the events of the planet for good or for ill. And the question last is, how are you doing with it? This type of question is hardest for me to answer. I do not want to throw seeds of fear into the world. My perception is that those seeking the light are increasing tremendously. That all over now we see people seeking the peace. But I also perceive that the polarity is forming. I simply mean that as the light and the light bearers move toward closer understanding, so does the energy that on your earth is called the darkness is also forming. The battle is joined. I have said before, I am a beggar going among all of you. I am begging for anyone with the slightest interest in mankind to take it upon themselves at this time to put everything else possible out of their mind and move for the light. I do not say this lightly. I do not say this as an off statement. I say it with all of the power that I can muster. If you care, now is the time to do something about it. The more of you who can burst into freedom of understanding will hold the mirrors for those that come after you. If you do not, there might not be much left to talk about. Now, if you cannot do it for yourself, then for God's sake, do it for somebody else. Those of you who have children, do it for them. Those of you who wish to have children, have it for them. Now, it is no longer a simple matter of is it convenient.
Bartholomew, there is something that I think I can describe as the avalanche of our times. And as an analogy, you must know how difficult it is to extricate yourself from an avalanche.
True.
So I think what we need is a way to extricate ourselves from this avalanche. I think that probably most of us know and understand what's been said and what's being said for a long time and wish it, maybe not want it, but wish it with a very, very deep desire. But there needs to be a strength of some sort in order to extricate, perhaps not extricate, but a way to come in rhythm perhaps and find peace within this avalanche, because to me that seems to be the avalanche of our times. It's something you can become caught up in very easily and be taken away from very easily. And there, I believe for me at least, that the question I ask most heartily is a means to realize and to keep in mind every day, all day, these things that we talked about.
I think that is the only way. That's why I say, find your way and never let it go. No one in this room with deep intent of heart could fail to find a way.
Marty, question.
Do you find that in the present time there are more children being born who have extreme awareness and are able to hold on to that
in order to work as they grow older and to teach their parents at the same time?
Yes. The answer is, are children being born now more likely to have expanded states of awareness? The answer is yes. Understand again, the activities of the earth plane are very obvious to people about to incarnate into this world. And many simply choose not to come at this time. You will find among your babies to be born some who have come to do their best to teach what they know. They may be heard, they may not be heard, but they must try. They must try.
Bartholomew, I have a question about the mercy that we do operate on so many different levels. Our conscious level every day as parents, as human beings. How do we best learn mercy with these children? Because there is a certain amount of power that they have come into this world with. And sometimes we react against that power. And we don't do it very mercifully.
I feel that the mistake that humans make is thinking that children are children. If you would deal with your children as you do with other adults, I think things would be much different. When you see a big adult moving into the room, you do not treat them the same as you do a little toddler.
No.
And yet I would ask you to give thought to that. I mean to give them the respect that you would a larger being, the honesty that you would a larger being, the sense of maturity that you would a larger being. I would ask that you put all of that into your response, because yes, they are in small bodies, but that is the only way that they are small. And they yearn. Some of these children coming in are going to have a great deal of trouble staying in these small bodies. And it is really a need at this time to put yourself in the place of saying, is it really true that this is a child? Now, in some ways, they need to understand the movements of the earth plane. Yes, you do not just say to a two-year-old, oh, by all means, go play on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
No, you understand what I'm saying. They have certain rituals of how to manifest safely on this earth plane that need to be brought to their mind. I am speaking of that deeper part of them. Believe me, if you start getting into your own being and asking how best to deal deeply, truly, and maturely with this energy in my life, the answers will come, and they will come maturely and dynamically and creatively. But the whole ritual of raising children is so decided and followed upon because of the way you were done to, and so on and so on. I mean, the rituals are very strong. I say don't treat each other with rituals either. Do you understand how you treat each other is with total ritual? Man and wife, that's one ritual. You know, father and son, one ritual. Based on what? Based on the highest? Oh no. Oh no. If it were based on the highest that you'd ever read about or experienced or even thought about, life would be a whole lot better. It's based on what is most impinging on you, which is your own experience. If you could just get over the idea of seeing all of these children as needing something that you have that they don't have, and can see instead that there are two fields of energy that are impinging at this moment, and within the movement of these two energy fields there is no superior inferior, there are simply two fields of energy, and out of this there must be a maximum, and go within and say, show me the maximum, then you will feel it, and then you will do it, and it will be done. and then the next moment appears, and it's all new. If you start and keep on raising your children and having your relationships done by old rituals, you are never going to get anywhere. It has to be broken out of you. All of these have to be broken out of you. You know within your being, right action, true right action. So if you can just, instead of seeing the smallness, tune into the largerness and just, they have a need. And if you truly wish to serve, then you look past the words. You don't listen to the pleas. You don't listen to the cries. You go into it and you say, I know what is needful, and I have the strength to do it. And it is done. Do you understand?
Mark, right along this line, those of us who have raised our children, this could be a very guilt complex.
Please don't. Please don't.
Well, this is my point, Joe. Okay?
Please don't. There isn't anyone in this room, father, mother, child, that has not done a roster of things that they could feel guilty about if they put their mind to it seriously. I do not approve of guilt. I do not approve of it at all. I see no function for it. I see no upliftment to it. I see no beauty in it, and I certainly don't see any divine in it. I tell you before, you have set this game up yourselves, and you are stuck with it. But it's not God's problem, because he does not see or enter into or care a hoot about all of these terrifying images that you have created in your mind, because he knows them to be unreal. If you find them real, then it's your job to find them unreal. But the divine power is not confused by your unreality. Never has been and never will be. That is the one thing you cannot do, is to create an eternal hell. The only eternal creation comes from the divine. And nothing you create from your ego will ever be eternal. And thank God.
Donna, if you in your daily work, job, that you come into large contact of people like I do each day that are filled with resentment, hate, I have each day I see the need there, and they're crying out, but they're so filled with hate and resentment. How can you turn that around?
The question is, when you find yourself in an environment that is filled with negativity, what are your options? All right, again, you have two options. One will fill your ego with pleasure, and the other will make you unhappy. You must assess with unending honesty your own strength. It is a very arrogant person who thinks they can move into great areas of negativity and be a light unto them all. What usually happens is that they put out any light that you ever had. The do-gooder stands in jeopardy. I'm not referring to you. I understand what you're speaking of. You're speaking of a school situation and a teaching need. I still go back to the first point. Assess your own strength. If you find that you are not strong enough to maintain a stance of centered awareness in that environment, then I would say, if you even have to go and beg for your dinner, get out. Because you will not help them, and they will not help you. And those of you that are saying, well, then what about those poor things? I say very, very strongly, they are getting what they want. They are living the life that they want to live at this time. And please, please understand that the greatest good done on this or any other planet is done through the power of the highest level of spiritual expansion. What you do verbally, what you do physically, is not anywhere near as important as what your awareness is doing while you are doing it. And if you cannot hold a centered state, then you are simply adding to the chaos. A question was asked not too long ago about the nuclear demonstrations. Did I not approve of them? My answer is simply, if you could see the amount of hate that the demonstrators were generating, you would ask yourself very quietly, is it really a positive action? No matter what their mouths are saying, no matter how righteous their cause, what are they doing with their awareness while they are doing that? And if at that time they are filled with understanding, compassion, upliftment, then I say it is a positive action. If they are not, then would you please tell me the difference between a thought form of ugliness over a nuclear mess or over another mess? Do you see? You are always looking at the wrong things. You look at what is happening on the physical plane. You say, I don't like nuclear this and that. I say, all right. And are you creating hate over it? Are you getting so imbued with hate that you are now a part of this vast hate machine? What are you doing? It is so easy to feel self-righteous. And when you feel self-righteous, somebody has to be wrong. Believe me, if you are right, look carefully in your mind and somebody in there is wrong. And that makes you better, doesn't it? Oh, so much better. And when you are better, beware. Because people who are better oftentimes have a great deal of hatred in them against somebody along the line. Look very carefully. Please don't leave here thinking that I'm in favor of nuclear waste being strewn across your universe. I'm simply saying, my concern is with your awareness. Where is your awareness when you are doing anything? I don't care what it is. Where is your awareness? And I think we best put this. I'm very grateful to all of you for coming.
Thank you, Bartholomew.